Chema. So this is the concluding session of the Life Divine Camp, and actually we have completed book one entirely, the first 28 chapters. So one of the beautiful things when we turn to the Life Divine is that it opens many doors and windows to knowledge of the highest kind, knowledge which is an integral knowledge, and it makes us feel there is so much to know. That's one thing which happens when we read Sri Aurobindo's works. At least to me it was like it ignites a fire in the mind, in the heart. Oh, there is so much to know. And with that comes the sense that so much time has been wasted. There is so much more. Now, knowing is one thing, then realizing it, so that's the next level. So it fills us with a joy and an enthusiasm and opens doors to endless progress. That's what Sri Aurobindo does to start with when we read works like The Life Divine. Actually, any of his works, but specifically a work like The Life Divine. The second thing that happens is it awakens in us an intense aspiration, because one of the things that finishes the aspiration or stifles the aspiration is the illusion of knowledge which comes, unfortunately, when we read books, easy to understand scriptures, when we do some techniques, we have a feeling that we know it, we are doing it. But the beauty of Sri Aurobindo is, it is a scripture of the highest kind, but every time one reads it, one feels there is yet not, you know, the thirst for knowledge awakens. So I remember the story when Ganesha has to write what Rishi Vyas is dictating to him. And there is a condition, and the condition is, Ganesh says, you have to dictate continuously because I am too fast, too swift. If you stop, then I go away. So Vyasa puts also a condition. He says it has to be reciprocal. Okay, I'll do that. But you must give me a promise on your behalf that you will write further only when you understand. So as they say, the Mahabharata has some cryptic verses which are very difficult. They are mind-boggling. Suddenly, you know, Ganesh had to stop. Meanwhile, Vyas could open his super sea of inspiration. So with the Life Divine, a work like the Life Divine, this is what happens, that we are reading through and suddenly something strikes us, which is completely, it spins the mind. And many people, sometimes they say, oh, it's difficult and give up. But actually it is very beautiful. It's like, if you look at Life Divine as a discovery, we are moving on a grand trunk road. Suddenly there is a beautiful road which appears. We don't know which way it is taking us. And yet it is pointing in that direction. We go there and there are such wonderful marvels to discover. So Sri Aurobindo is like a super scientist who has made these discoveries to us. And he is not doing a slideshow. He is inviting us to the discovery. A slideshow, a neat presentation, all that gives us an illusion that I know it. But he invites us. So everything is there, and yet it is presented in a way, as Sri Aurobindo said at one point, I have come down, put the things at the level of the higher mind. That whole thing has come down as a cascade of thought. Now I want you to stretch up. So reading the Life Divine is to engage in the yoga of the Life Divine, because by its very nature it opens the mind, it helps us to stretch our consciousness, and that's what yoga is about. And then we come in contact with Sri Aurobindo and the mother's consciousness. And as I always feel, that it's a pity, and I really use it in the most deepest sense, it's a pity that Sri Aurobindo has written all this and mother has spoken all this. But I think people who have even tried to read are very, very few. And that's true even among the devotees, what to say of. It's a pity, because there is an idea that we know. Even if we know, there is, I mean, if first of all, to believe that one knows is the beginning of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge is that I don't know. And everything we do except at least a passage, a page, it's satsang of the highest kind. Why? Because to read Sri Aurobindo is to be in the company of Sri Aurobindo. There's a very beautiful line in Savitri that comes to me when I think of Sri Aurobindo writing on the desk or dictating Savitri and Nirodha as the scribe writing it. Patient he sat like an incarnate hope. Sri Aurobindo has incarnated the divine, all that is fine. But he has incarnated hope, endless hope. No limit to the hope that he brings to us. So all the more in this age of cynicism, doubt, where there is a divorce between reason and faith, divorce between man and his highest possibilities, so many kinds of inner schism in which we live, world torn by wars and disunity and factionalism of various kinds, Sri Aurobindo brings hope. And what is the basis of this hope? Though he presents it very logically, and the basis is from that fundamental truth which the ancient seers gave us. But Sri Aurobindo is like a seed which Sri Aurobindo affirms and brings it out in a tree. And that ancient seed which the Vedic seers gave, one was ekameva dvitiyam, but something still greater. Still greater in the sense, ekameva dvitiyam is one without a second, and Sri Aurobindo speaks about it. But something still greater, which Sri Aurobindo used to meditate while in the Alipur jail, moving between the place, workshop of the prisoners and the goshala, where the cows used to tend. And he would walk and he would have this one phrase from the Upanishads, Sarv Kalvidam Brahmam. And I don't know if anything more powerful has ever been given to man. It literally means all this that is Brahman. And the mother gives this remedy much later. She says, whenever you are faced with confusion, when everything appears dark, then you must remember, all is the divine. There is nothing else but the divine. And hold on to this truth. And he saw it. That's why he says, when darkness was dense and covered with darkness, he was seated within it, immense and alone. So this is the basis of hope, that the divine is concealed in the darkest depths of the unconscious. We just saw one of the paintings of Huta. Very beautiful. And darkness slipped and failed like a falling cloak from the reclining body of God. And there is a beautiful little note. So Hutadi asks, what exactly is this? What to paint? Then mother went into a trance and then she says, well, it's neither a man nor a woman. It's neither Vishnu or Brahma or Shiva. What she says, makes that comment. See, in who, that's how Sri Aurobindo says. But who is he then? By what name is he known? Is he Brahma or Vishnu, bodied or bodiless, man or a woman, twin or alone? Then again she went into trance because she says none of these things. Then she says you can draw, because she had met this being with an irised glow, sleeping in the inconscient. This is described in Mahabhagavata very passingly, whole process of creation. And she describes that you may paint a being who is reclining, he's covered with darkness, but he's reclining, his eyes are closed and his right hand is on the cheek. Now, it reminds us, of course, of Mahavishnu. That's how it is described. And she says that, and then all this darkness is being scattered and falling like a falling cloak. And then she says something very interesting. This is the first avatar, the transcendent who has plunged into the inconscient, and from there all other avatars are springing forth. Is something so wonderful. Because the divine dwells in creation, in the densest darkness, and of course in all of us, therefore there is hope. Otherwise, everything would be hopeless. If we have to rely on human effort, if to rely on what's happening in America and Russia and India and Bangladesh, then there would be no hope. But if we know that the divine exists, then there is hope. All the rest of the story of the light divine is how this great being who is hidden within, covered with darkness, but who is also become all this, this being, how is it the becoming going on? And that's the whole story of the life divine that he reveals. We shall tell the whole world of his ways and its cunning. So he's revealing to us the cunning of God. So the whole story begins with this seed of the divine cast into the inconscious. Now, there are hints of this, like Ashwath tree, the seed is above and the branches are below. So that's how it is, that there is the seed, is the divine seed which is gone into creation, and how it is coming up step by step, impelled by none other but the divine Shakti, who has herself gone into this. So she is the one who is bringing out all the powers and possibility, just as a mother conceives. That's it. That's job is over. But from that point onwards where she has conceived, her work never ends, let me put it like that. She has to, of course it's nature, but we can see the same process. Goes through all the stages and steps, and then the delivery, the jail delivery of the imprisoned God, and then the development and all the step stages, everything ultimately. So this process of unfolding, Sri Aurobindo describes, this has been missing. There are several beautiful things that Sri Aurobindo brings out in his work and vision. I don't like to use the word philosophy, because philosophy belongs to a much lesser realm. It belongs to the realm of thought. But Sri Aurobindo is vision and identity, and from there thought comes. So there is a fundamental difference. And how this unfolding takes place, in spite of all the chaos, in spite of all the apparent disorder, still everything tends to somehow sort itself out. And that it sorts itself out because there is the real idea, the supermind which is hidden in creation, giving it a secret impulsion. That's why in Mahakumbh you have crores of people. You may see chaos, up to you. But the beauty is, in spite of everything, things are sorted out. You may say that, you know, there is dirt in the Ganges and the Yamuna, but the fact remains that there was no cholera outbreak, no, what was that disease we all heard about, corona, nothing. Living demonstration that faith is a great power. So there is this beauty, and as other day, I think Sudha was telling me this story, somebody coming all the way to India, some Russian, and going away from here, he saw the cows moving on the road and all these things. And then he says, after going from India, I have belief, I'm convinced that God exists. There's no order, no system. And yet, not only India's story is running, it is rising. I mean, if you have to understand, see, God's working. It's amazing. Out of apparent chaos. And this chaos is extremely creative. We don't realize its power. If everything is too orderly, too systematized, everybody is in their comfort zone. You know, everything is told to you, don't go this way because traffic is busy. This way you will have, you know, shorter route. So one is navigating through a machine. So on one side, there is a model of life where man is driven more and more by machine. It has its immediate advantages, but it has its long-term problem, because we become dependent. Like today's doctors, they depend on the machine, and if the machine goes wrong, I mean, doctors don't know. They've lost the art of looking at a patient and smiling. At least, you know, the first medicine is the doctor smile. Patient is waiting patiently to get that little smile for which he is ready to pay the money. But the doctor brings out a chit pad with a grim face and a CT scan in his hand. He's going to pass a sentence. So you see, this understanding of life that he brings, that this divine unfolding. Now what happens when there is chaos? Often we say there is chaos and confusion in the world. When there is chaos, you're at your creative best. You learn it, you are going through. Not that we should create chaos, but chaos brings, as Sri Aurobindo says, he quotes in the Life Divine and essays on the Gita also, the saying of Heraclitus that war is the father of nations. War is the parent. Through chaos and conflict, creation evolves. Now, why it is so and what is the original battle going on? That he describes again in the Life Divine. That original battle is always because things are emerging from the inconscient and they are destined to grow and evolve towards their divine, predetermined divine destiny. And the logic is very simple because supermind is hidden as the real idea. He is not going to leave. Call it he, it or she, doesn't matter. It is going to push things towards that. So at one level, it means that all of us as the Jivatma in the supermind, our destinies has been, it's a fixed match. One of the sadhaks used to say, you know, we are playing a fixed match where victory has been ascertained. But even when Sri Krishna has shown to Arjuna that there is inevitable victory, still many things have to be cleared out of creation. So all that process is going on, which sometimes we may pity and disgust, all these are human, but the divine consciousness doesn't care for that. I mean, it takes into account, individually it takes care, but otherwise the unfolding takes place. Thankfully, with all the freedom that we have, well, there is a divine compulsion in things. And that's the beauty of creation, that this supermind, gospel of the supermind, because this has been missing, that's why we see that on one side we have the idea of Advaita, there is one reality. On the other side we have multiplicity and there is no bridge. So Sri Aurobindo brings the bridge. The missing link is the supermind. And what is supermind? It is the point where oneness and multiplicity meet. Where all the countless diversities of creation are taken care of and their unfolding, their evolution, their becoming, each thing. So that's why the greatest, the highest formula, if we may use the word formula, and where I'm sure everybody reaches after a point of time in yogic journey, you start with asking this, asking that, 100 things, and you realize that, you know, you have been tricked, fooled, all this. Then the greatest formula, Mother's last testimony given to us, 73, let thy will be done. In any case, divine will be done. So, that's the truth. What is this divine will? Divine will is the supermind, which is at once will and wisdom together. Omnipotence. It is the omnipotence and omniscience of God. And it is going to call the last shot. That's why she gave this message in 55. That no human will can finally prevail against the divine will. Put yourself deliberately on the side of the divine and the victory is certain. We do the other way around. God, you must be on my side. And Sri Aurobindo notes this in a little humorous way. He says, somebody says, you know, that God is on my side. He said, it will be much better if he said, I am on the side of God. And what is meant by being on the side of God? It means in the unfolding in time. It's not like God takes sides and this is forever. Something which had its relevance, its validity, its importance at one point of time is no more valid or relevant. So all evil is good in the passing and or good in the making. So every time we see a naughty child whom the whole class and teachers have written off, so it's good in the making. And every time you see an old man getting naughty like a youngster, it's good in the it's evil in the passing. Good in the passing. What was okay at one point of time, it appears evil. It's all context of time. But actually, in that great unfolding, ultimately the divine will pushes through everything. This divine will hidden in creation, which is one with knowledge and wisdom, is the supermind, the omnipotence and omniscience of God. So quite naturally, the best thing that we all can do is to turn toward that divine will, divine wisdom, and in all sincerity say, let thy will be done, let thy will be done, let thy will be done. And that will be done regardless of anything. So supermind is the determining idea, real idea. It is the law of truth, the other way Shobindu describes in the Life Divine. So there are two laws that operate upon us. This is so interesting. The law of ignorance, Yama's law. Yama is the son, S-O-N of S-U-N. He's the son of sun, Surya. Because he's born out of Chaya. Because in ignorance, we are not ready for the law of truth. It will shatter all our measures. That's how the mother says in Vijanada Boon, in Savitri, you know, if truth descended too soon, it will break the imperfect earth. It will shatter all human measures. So the law of Yama is measured. Things should be within this limit. If you go out, you get a hit back. If you try to be as a god, it restrains you. Death stays the journeying discoverer life. But equally, if you go on the other side, there is the goad. So between whiplash, goad of punishment, and the silver bribe or lure of heaven, man moves. But how long? Because the divine is ultimately infinity and freedom. So out of this law of Yama, when one has gone through the law of ignorance, it is also important, needed. Avidya, that's what he described, that avidya is, vidya assuming a form. And as we were reading yesterday, the supermind, the divine Maya uses both, the divine uses both vidya and avidya for his purposes. It's such a giving up, it gives so much of hope to us. That on one side, you have to go through the law of ignorance, avidyanch, mrityum tirtvait, ultimately, we transcend death when we go through that. So we keep through this cycle, the rebirth, the karma and whatever else. And then vidyanch amritam ashnate. By vidya, oneness, they discovered immortality. So first the law of Yama and Yami. Because Yami is his sister. She is Yamuna flowing here on earth. Yeah, she is Yama's sister actually. So she goes here. That's why she requests Yama, one day you must spare all the people who tie Rakhi. That's how the whole story is. You know, she ties Rakhi to Yama. Not Rakhi, but a bhai phuta, some threat to Yama. So Yama says, ask any gift, my sister. So she says, bro, please, those who that day tie threat to their brothers, you must spare them. He says, okay, that day. Not every day. So Yamuna carries all this anguish on earth and she prays for Krishna. Krishna comes, she weds Krishna. What a wonderful story it is. Kalindi, and then, you know, on the other side there is Ganga. So man's life has been between these two poles. Two rivers. In Savitri there is a description of two rivers of light. Otherwise there is a dark river below in which we move. And there is a bright river which is above. So the dark river, Yamuna, is heaving to touch the feet of the Lord. That's its only hope. And the bright river, Ganga, is descending. And there is a meeting point, Saraswati, where we can recover the seed of immortality. So basically our life moves between two rivers and we have been asked to leave this and enter into here. But because there is supermind, it's not needed. We go through the school of ignorance, painful school, and then we are released into the law of light. Diti and Aditi, that's how it's described. But we can't take a jump like that. We have to go through it. So man has to be patient. He has to have faith. And a point of time comes when we discover not Diti, the mother of division, but Aditi, which is our divine mother. Then a different law begins to operate. So as long as man chooses to live in ignorance, he will go through certain way of life and he is hit, he gets blows, through all this he gets chastened. But when he gives himself to Aditi, the divine mother, then another kind of a law begins to apply to him, which is the law of the Divine Mother directly taking up. It's like plant below the earth and above the earth. So Shobindo reveals this secret so beautifully. Vidya and Avidya, they are two forms of one. The supermind holds the secret of both. Through Vidya Mai Maya, it releases all the seeds into creation. Where oneness is there, all the seeds of rays of light have come, but they have not forgotten the oneness. Through Avidya, each is taken up separately and is developed in its own way. Because that is required. A child who forever stays, it's so nice when a child is near the mother, with the mom as a child. But when he grows up and says, Mama, I don't want to go out of the house. Mamas feel very, some problem. The whole idea is, child should go out and the child must discover. So for development, individual development, the seed, a veil of ignorance has been put. It is like eggs, or mother gives a very nice example, ice creams being put in so many, what is it called, those cones and cups in which it must take form, and then each ice cream has a certain flavor. So we are all ice creams. Some put flavor of Karela, bitterness. Poor divine has to eat it. Does he have a choice? No. But some put in it sweetness, any kind of sweetness, vanilla, butterscotch and chocolate, and he loves all of them. He is maduram maduram. He loves to have that sweet ice cream. So here also he gives us another secret which we find missing. That there is in us a double soul. The desired soul in front, and the problem of this desired soul, in the sense it's the word soul is used because we think it is myself. And when we live by it, then invariably one can almost see it as an axiomatic truth. As Mother says in one of her letters, it is so revealing. There is always a bitterness that comes at the end of human love. And if one is very fortunate in the middle of human love, and very, very fortunate in the beginning. A problem is, in the beginning nobody understands. Oh, no. I can try this by chance. Someone tries. Then life, age catches up. Then one says, no. I think what Mother says, there is a meaning in it. So what he is saying? He is saying that it's not like a final judgment on man. But as long as we remain in the desire and ego, driven by the desired soul, we cannot make our own life, let alone life of earth, perfect. It's just impossible. One may have debate, discussion, any amount of thing. One may have high hopes or low hopes or anything. But it'll meet a dead wall, because desire and ego invariably limit. People fight because of that. Because the moment you come close, so if one wants to remain a happy, healthy relationship, keep a little distance. Logical thing. If you get too close, it'll be, as they say, too close for comfort. Familiarity breeds contempt. So this is what ignorance creates, the sense, ego is myself, the desired self I am here to live for. But Sri Aurobindo unlocks that door and says, behind the desired self, there is the true soul. This is something really very unique to Sri Aurobindo. There is a mention of the soul very vaguely in some places, but people debate, is there an individual soul? We'll see the books of Vedanta debating this. Buddha went on to say anatma. And even people debate whether there is an individual soul or not based on the Gita, because they read the second chapter and they say, see, ultimately there is nothing like an individual soul. Sri Krishna is speaking about the self, which na jayate mriyate, and then he says, you know, nanam siddhanti shasa. He's about the self. Where is he saying about the individual soul? So this is a very, very interesting contribution. It gives a meaning. Because otherwise, if there is no individual soul, what does it matter? Self will take care of itself. And it raises questions about karma. Where does karma go? If we are just the ego, then where is the repository of karma which is carried on to the next life? One can understand in this life. So behind this surface desired soul is the psychic being. And just as we see creation at two levels, vidya and avidya, or avidya and vidya, we see our individual life at two levels, the surface soul and the psychic being. And as long as we are in the surface soul, because of the grip of ignorance, and what does it do? And that's another beauty of this idea of psychic being, that we can look at it this way. All of us are distinct and unique and differentiated from others. Now, being differentiated and being separate are two different things. We start believing we are separate, and that's where the confusion lies. The world has been made for differentiation, differentiated unity, unity in diversity. The divine is quite a creative player. He doesn't make two things alike, or rather his consort, the Shakti. No two steps or motions are the same. You cannot put her creative dance into any rhythm. Any people try to do it and they fail. They even fix a date for yugas. How foolish it is to fix for her a term, a date, a method. And Shobindu says in Savitri that she lowers herself to accommodate into the range of mind, but thought nor word can seize the eternal truth. The whole world lives by a single ray of her sun. And then he says, what we must do? Dare to surrender to her absolute. Then she reveals her truth, which is unpartitioned, rhythm, the dance of the eternal dancer, which is so amazing, so beautiful. So all this he reveals in the life divine. And the first, so basically two important, most important things. One is that there is a soul within. Of course, he wrote a letter, there is a soul within and grace above. That's all you need to know. Really? Nothing else? He says, yes, really. We can say there is a super mind in between. Super mind is actually, we can put it like that, it's a divine love, divine grace, acting in each one in a different way. It is not sameness. Its method is not dealing with each one in the same way. If it did that, so our idea of justice, our idea of divine dispensation is so much biased, because we think he must deal with everybody the same way. He does not. Because each one is in a different stage of development. That's why Shobindu says the unfolding of this yoga takes place differently in different individuals. And that's why nobody else except the Divine Mother can be the guide. Because she knows each one and his line of development in this great unfolding. So first important thing is the psychic being. And that's the discovery we all have to make. That's the minimum. All other stories of hair going, growing, becoming golden, and the, you know, halo around the head, and mind can, is a great trickster. It can make you feel you are supreme when everybody is laughing at you. Mind is a great trickster. So each one, psychic being, is a different stage of development. That's why he would say what applies to X does not apply to Y. And that's why we see in this yoga, there's no standard format. Somebody, they would say, meditate. Another person, Shobindu, would say, you don't need to meditate. I've actually seen both the letters. One letter where Shobindu is saying, no need for you to meditate. Work is your yoga. Another person where the mother says, every day you must meditate, getting up at 1:30 in the night, well, morning. And all his life he meditated. 3 hours, 4 hours, getting up at this point of time. Someone else will say, nothing is required for you. Just open to the mother, love the mother, know that the mother loves you. Your only meditation is that you are in the mother's lap. And this is only because the psychic being is the individual soul which is developing in each one along different lines of evolution. All these lines Shobindu describes, the emergent lines of consciousness, the lines of descent. And the second thing which is so important is the supermind behind everything, pushing everything. And that's why fortunately our life takes unexpected turns. We don't like it. We want things to run according to my mental planning. If anybody ever, it's a survey one should do, at 50 says, my life went along the lines I had decided and planned. One could almost say anybody lift her hands. It just doesn't work. With all the logic and reason at our disposal, we logically plan one thing. And we may be unhappy at that point of time, but this is because the grace is there, the supermind is there. It does a course correction. We don't like that course correction. But that's how it does. That's the beauty of supermind. It doesn't act according to a one fixed formula. There is no formula, in fact. There's that beautiful story which Shubindu recounts, that there are these two yogis sitting under a tree. I must read some passages. So, and Narada is going through, and both of them say, you are going to the Lord? Yes, I have a free access. I have a VIP pass and I have got it. He's a demigod. So he has been one of those who was born human and then arrived at the demigod status. That's why he's a messenger. All these demigods like Ribhus are artisans of immortality. Similarly, Hanuman and Narada especially, because he was born as a human, so they become messengers between God's mind and earth's. So will you please ask him, when will we realize? So he says, okay, very easy. So comes back, tapasvi. How much time I'll take? 3 lives. What? 30 years I have been practicing austerities. 3 lives? Ah, okay. Let me go and enjoy this life. Anyways, 3 life assurance is there. I'll do it next life. He goes and gets up. And there is the bhakta. How much time? How much time for me? He says, do you see the number of leaves on the tree? How many? How many? He says, plenty, I can't count. He says, after that many lives, you will realize the Lord. What? I will realize the Lord? See, this story Shobindo quotes. This story that has come from the mouth of 2 great realized beings. One is, of course, Sri Ramakrishna, and of course, Shobindo the avatar. He quotes this story. And the bhakta begins to dance with joy. My Lord will come. He will come. After so many lives, he will come. And the beauty of the story doesn't end here. The beauty is that the Lord reveals himself at that very point of time. So, he asked, but just now he said so many lives. He says, yes, but by that intensity of aspiration, you condensed it. See, this is a secret. Time management, learn to concentrate. Time management, learn to concentrate. What we do instead is impatience. Impatience is not concentration. When will I? When will I? I want to do it in this life. That's impatience. Instead of that, quietly concentrate. See what all is distracting us. See what all is taking away our energies. Put it back into the bonfire. Aurobindo's today's bonfire. Put in the bonfire so the bonfire grows bigger and bigger. And then ultimately he reveals at his own time. Let's give him his part to play. If he reveals according to my notions, then he is not divine. He has his own joy in the play. Let's give him his own joy. He will reveal when he wants to reveal. So all this beautiful revelation we discover in all of Shurvindo's works. And of course, all the rest we have been reading through. But something which I want to read particularly is about this double soul of man. Because this is, I feel, the most important aspect. The immediate program. We have so many programs which go on. Even there are programs of direct supramentalization of the cells. I don't know. Everything is possible in this great world. But this is the real program. Realizing the divine within. and how Shobindo reveals about this. And he says, this is the psychic transformation is one necessary condition of the total transformation. There are others, but this is the one necessary condition. And then he says, what happens? The Upanishad says, no bigger than a man's thumb. So what happens when this psychic entity comes out? Or it may become aware of its eternal companion and elect to live forever in his presence in an imperishable union and oneness as the eternal lover with the eternal beloved, which of all spiritual experiences is the most intense in beauty and rapture. This is the psychic being can. What else it can do? By itself, the psychic being at a certain stage might be content to create a formation of truth, good and beauty and make that its station. So, one of the signs of the psychic being active in nature, one begins to seek the truth of things, good and beauty. So in different ways, at different levels. So this is the first program. And then he says, well, one has to go beyond into the, to open the doors above. And that also he describes very beautifully. And that also we can read. What happens when the doors above open? Okay. Why we, when we read all this, we realize that we are so far from things. And so much is there to realize. And that is something so amazing. There are two kinds of responses human beings make when they are in front of the sea, ocean, Shobindo opens. One is it can be intimidating. It's so vast. The other is it can be exciting. What an adventure. This is so vast. So much to know, so much to discover. So this is where Shobindo speaks of the infinite adventure. And Mother says, for this yoga one needs the spirit of the adventurer. She says it's a great adventure. And she says something very interesting, which many people find very disconcerting. She says, what will happen to you? I don't know. This is a very sweet and cute statement. She qualifies it. The end is certain. But why? Because there is no standard format along which creation moves. And I said, that's why you started with this idea of creative chaos, and there's something which, you know, as we move. So one of them is one discovers the silent self above. One can enter into the peace of nirvana. And then he speaks about the descent, which is the class most important aspect of this yoga. So while all other yogas speak of ascent of consciousness or a state of nirvana or going within and discovering the self or enlightenment, it is only in Shobindo's yoga that the descent takes place. And there's a big lot of letters back and forth on this. One of them was when a famous yogi, I won't take the name, but quite close to Pondicherry, within 100 kilometers. And from his ashram, somebody, Dilip Kumar Roy, I know, he would go back and forth. But he says that, you know, what does it mean by descent? God is everywhere. He says, yes, he is everywhere, but there are different statuses and levels of his being. So he is on each plane and in everyone. But at each plane, he either reveals or hides. So this Beauty is that we have seen the Creator through the veils, and Sri Aurobindo brings the Creator unveiled. So again, among the different things that Sri Aurobindo unites, matter and spirit, and Creator and creation. Always they are one, but because of the veil we feel the separation. But in reality they can not be separate. One cannot live, breathe, exist even for a moment if the origin were to withdraw from us. This sheer common sense to believe that one can exist without the origin, the divine consciousness, is nothing but foolhardiness. So he says you can discover all these things, but the most important is the descent. So what happens with the descent? It is in the latter alternative, that is the descent, that we find the secret we are seeking. So there are a number of secrets he reveals, the means of the transition. And what does it mean? A scale of intensities which can be regarded as so many stairs in the ascension of mind, or in a descent into mind from that which is beyond it. We are aware of a sea-like downpour of masses of a spontaneous knowledge which assumes the nature of thought but has a different character from the process of thought. This is what we see in the life divine. Sea-like downpour. It's the body of words, thought. It carries its own logic. That's the beauty. It's not that Shiva is trying to logically argue something, but it carries its own logic based on a data to which we don't have an access, but we can. And then we look at it that yes, it's so logical. So see like downpour of thought, knowledge, which assumes the nature of thought, but it has a different character from the process of thought to which we are accustomed, for there is nothing here of seeking, no trace of mental construction, no labor of speculation or difficult discovery. It is an automatic and spontaneous knowledge from a higher mind that seems to be in possession of truth and not in search of hidden and withheld realities. Then he says this thought gradually assumes a cosmic character. It's not a thought which is confined to a surface vision of things. It sees things in a very large scale. That's how the overmind sees. It's a typical overmind vision of Krishna, where he sees both sides in that great unfolding, and people can't understand why he's doing what he's doing. But he is able to see beyond it. Sri Aurobindo summarizes the Mahabharata war. So many people have tried to, when you see it from an ideological perspective, oh, Sri Krishna wanted to teach mankind that war is not good. It has to be a horrible god to, you know, make you go through all this only to teach that war is not good. And, well, man is not going to learn by this. People even indict him, oh, because he also did some karmas and because of which he has gone to some dark state of hell. Somebody asked me this, that, but it is said in some scripture Krishna is in hell. I said, yes, you're right. Who else can go to hell without being affected by it except our Krishna? He's always smiling. If he goes to hell, he will change it into heaven. So at some point only he has the power to descend into that darkest state. Mother Divine writes about her prayer. So it has a cosmic character. It sees through everything, behind everything. As he says, one classic example. Our lives are their bridal of Radha and Krishna. Our love is their kiss. Look at the cosmic thought. In the pattern and bloom of the flower he is woven. In the luminous net of the stars he is caught. Cosmic thought. In the beauty, in the strength of a man, in the beauty of woman. In the laughter of boy, in the blush of a girl, the hand that sent Jupiter spinning through heaven spends all its cunning to fashion a girl. What a way he shows us the divine everywhere. So this thought begins to show the divine everywhere in everything. Even the most impossible situations, one begins to discover the divine. It makes us discover. And beyond this to thought, we can distinguish a greater illumination instinct with an increased power and intensity and driving force. A luminosity of the nature of truth side with thought formulation as a minor and dependent activity. So now this thought begins to gather its intensity, force. It has the capacity to change, the capacity to transmit itself, the capacity to even alter the structures of thought in the human mind. One example is Swami Vivekananda, when he was speaking at some point of time in one of the talks, he suddenly stopped. He has given so many lectures. He suddenly stopped and just went away. So people asked him that, why did you stop? There are two similar examples of Swamiji. So he says, I saw that all these things are breaking everybody's structures, which he was an iconoclast. And he thought it's premature and he just withdrew and went away. But another place was when they asked him about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahans. He spoke a few words and then stopped. Then when he was asked, sir, but they are eager to know. He says, they don't deserve to know. He could see all this. They don't deserve to know. They are not ready to know. End of the story. So it's an illuminating thought. It has a great power. It can effectuate changes in others, in the world, in creation. One lonely thought becomes omnipotent. This is the power of this thought which comes from the illumined level. And still our intuition, it's like a stab of light. It suddenly shows what's behind. What's going on behind the Russia-Ukraine war? What's going... Look at mothers, how she said 50 years, almost 50 years back. Yeah, 50 years back, nearly. See, I know when the disciple asked, India lost a chance in 71 for India and Pakistan to become one. She says, yes, they lost the chance. She had asked them to go and take over Pakistan. Sounds very strange, no? She's advising, go to the end of the war, finish it. God is supposed to teach them, don't do it, it's not a good thing. But then she says, well, I have seen how it will happen. And then she laughs. The disciple says, how? She says, Pakistan will split into 5 parts and then they will demand to join. Could anybody have foreseen at that point of time? Even now people are doubting. But Pakistan is already split. Balochistan is separated, practically. Higher up if you go, already separated. There is a little Punjab, Pakistan, which is holding on to itself. Of course, Bangladesh got separated. So there is a strange way that the divine foresees. But why he takes us through all this long journey? Because avidyan chamrityam tirtva. We have to deserve. Krishna doesn't do magic in the jail and suddenly one lightning falls and Kansa dies. He could have done all that. He was doing all those miracles. Why didn't he do that? Suddenly sitting there, he would have said some mantra and Kansa's palace, they would have announced, you know what, the king has died. He has to prepare those who are going to take over the throne. So we are going through a period of preparation. That's what supermind is doing to us. And then there is the intuitive mind where there is truth force, truth vision, truth thought, truth sense, truth feeling, truth action, truth imagination. So all this inspiration, intuition, revelation, right action, all this will develop. And I think it is already developing. If we really look closely to what's happening, we've already spoken about it, so we won't repeat it. And then the supramental manifestation. So we are living in wonderful times. To close, really wonderful times. And in a certain sense, exciting times. So much is happening. So much shift is taking place. And of course, the old people, I mean, not in this yoga, people are always young. Old people always cry, see, Kali Yuga has come. Children don't listen to parents. God will say, thank God, they are freed from the atavism. Because our criteria and Krishna is the original rebel. He taught everybody, don't listen. Don't listen to parents, don't listen to guru, don't listen to teachers, don't listen to elders. Everything he said. But there is something else also he said which people have forgotten. Listen to Dharma, listen to the divine. Half the truth everybody has got. But listen to dharma, listen to divine. This dharma is in the heart of man. And this too we see nowadays children. They are speaking this language. That's how, because they are feeling something going on inside. It's a long journey. But at least we have started taking some infant steps. So it's so beautiful. There is hope because there is the psychic being in us which refuses to give up. It has traveled so many lives. We better complete the journey. Few more lives. We don't want to be runaways. And already we have done. It's like somebody has to be foolish to come all the way to Chennai and then say, oh, bus journey to Pondicherry, I won't go. Or somebody who even reaches Pondicherry and says, no, now I have to take a rickshaw or something. Foolish. Or to come up to the ashram. There is actually an incident I saw. Somebody got engaged with the Dwarpal at the ashram. Okay, everybody understands what Dwarpal is, huh? I'll not elaborate. So the person who is to ensure people will enter or not. So there was a tussle. Why phone has to be switched off? Why phone has not to be switched off? And this started. So the man who was to go in, okay, I'll not go. He took a stand. So I got hold of him. I said, are you being foolish? He said, no, how can I? I said, you have come for the darshan at samadhi. Forget, you are not here to get into argument with a person and convince him. He cannot be convinced. So you are sure you cannot, but you are losing a chance. You have come all the way and that fellow has come from very far. And at that point, not that the behavior is justified. That's not the point. But the point is that if you are really sincere, you will say, okay, I don't like it, but I'll go here because I am here for Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Doesn't matter. See how in the ashram we are minutely tested. The people who don't like something happening here, there, and they say, I'll go away. Are you? You get a world of your liking. Is there any place in the world here people can speak like that? Any place in the world where it's according to your liking? So this is how psychic being never gives up. One of the signs is it says, ah, we have lies beyond. This is a beautiful passage in one of Sri Aurobindo's poem. I have a thirst, and the thirst presupposes water somewhere. But in this life I may never find. But are there not lives beyond us? Old nature forbids, sits a phantom on the way. Old habits return. But I shall not faint, O God, I have a thirst. And that's what mother says. All that is required is the thirst, the longing. That thirst is the important thing. And then she says, do not cling. Two conditions, he said. So the psychic being is the source of hope. The supermind is the source of hope. He is behind everything. It's the determining power, the real idea. Whatever we may do, whichever way we may go, it will ultimately push us towards where we have to go. As Sri Krishna tells Sri Aurobindo, that don't worry. All their understanding is in my hands. Whatever they may say or not say, I have decided this case in my own wisdom and doesn't matter. And see how things take place. To live with that faith. So the supermind gives us hope. And above all, as we know, Sri Aurobindo and the mother are the hope. So every time when we hear all the voices of people, utopia gone this, utopia gone that, God knows what they understand by utopia. Everybody's utopia is their own utopia. Once America was utopia, now thank God, you know, people are being driven away. God drives us out of every paradise so that crossing through a desert. Are you have left the paradise, Vrindavan, and gone to utopia. So this idea of utopia, a world which is according to my fancies, that you have to discard to discover the utopia and participate in the utopia. That's how we'll close with those lines from Ahana, where all of them are praying that we want the seekers of light, the hunters of light and the seekers of delight. And they're all climbing up the slopes. And then Ahana, dawn goddess, comes. He says, why you are not able to reach, you know, oh man, you have surrounded your life with flowers that are scentless. So God snatches away. Then he said, what are you doing? Sir, this is so precious. Hold on. I'm clearing your room. I'll bring the real ones. You don't know what real ones are. And then it says, but lo, I come, and behind me, light and with thunder. And then he says, I have a chain for Krishna. I have a chain for him taken. And I'll drag you along. She doesn't leave it to man. She says, I'll take you along so that you will be with Krishna as slave and for master. God becomes our slave. No? Every time we pray and he fulfills. We treat him like that. And he's also the master. Therefore at the end he says, and take place in thy ras and the ecstasy after. So all these mistuning of our steps is ultimately to teach us, tune our steps to the divine. This is the great secret. What is the rhythm of the divine is known to the supermind. And only when the supermind starts setting all our rhythms correct, we are all out of steps. Small story, then we learned. Mass exercise, when I used to do, everybody would laugh. Because from there it was so obvious that I am out of step. So people used to tell me that, you know, it is so funny you are out of step. I said, yeah, but every one of us is out of step. Who keeps pace with the steps of the Lord? Truly we cannot, but we can give ourselves into her arms. She will teach us, train us. We'll fall and stumble in this dance. She'll lift us, and one day we will dance and keep pace with the feet of Krishna, so that the dance of Krishna and Kali changes into the dance of Krishna and Radha. Jai Ma.